And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. Today is Thursday, March 26th. We have a great show lined up for you today, as we do every day here on Juno Afternoon. We'll talk with Jeremy Briggs Roberts, one of the candidates for the position of music director and conductor for the Juno Symphony. Rhonda Gardiner will be here to highlight this Saturday's Zippity Doo Dah concert. We'll talk with author Andy Hall about his presentation at UAS this Friday. And Nancy Jaturny will be here with Arts Up, as she is every Thursday. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more here on a Juno Afternoon. But first, National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The state of Alaska has awarded a grant to the Yukon-Kuskokwim Economic Development Council for a manufacturing project. If the plan goes forward, workers at a plant in Bethel would use the region's wood resources to build frames for high-energy efficient housing. The project is also intended to improve housing for the region's native villages. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has more.
Brent Latham is the Economic and Energy Development Director at the Association of Village Council Presidents, or AVCP, the regional tribal nonprofit that houses the new Yukon-Kuskokwim Economic Development Council, or YKEDC, for which he's also the director. He says the project has the potential to create new jobs in one of the state's most economically depressed regions.
It would be dozens of jobs.
The grant of about $70,000 was awarded January 23rd. The funds are intended to support the truss manufacturing project from assessment and feasibility to implementation. AVCP President Myron Nanning says local manufacturing could have cost advantages for building housing.
Trying to find ways to reduce costs of ordering material from out-of-state sources.
40% of housing stock in the region is considered overcrowded, and about 3,000 homes should be replaced. That's according to a feasibility study produced for AVCP by the Cold Climate Housing Research Center and funded by the state of Alaska. Jack Hebert is CEO for the nonprofit. He says the plant would supply trusses made from local white spruce for their integrated truss design. Hebert says the design isn't fancy, but it's adaptable and way more energy efficient than the houses that exist in the region now.
Our typical home that's built with this technique, a house that would use a regular framed house, about 1,200 gallons a year in fuel, uses more like 200 gallons of fuel a year. So it's about an 80% reduction in the amount of fuel used.
Business planning should be done by the end of June. AVCP and YKEDC officials say they still have to secure construction funding and probably won't break ground on the truss plant until 2016. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
A suspect has been arrested in connection with the attack of a Bureau of Indian Affairs manager for South Dakota's Crow Creek Reservation. The attack took place at the local BIA headquarters. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbold reports.
A spokeswoman with the Department of the Interior said in a statement that BIA police are investigating the attack against Patrick F. Duffy. Duffy was reportedly stabbed in Fort Thompson, South Dakota, Wednesday. Interior officials say a suspect is in custody and incarcerated in a tribal jail in the area. Former Crow Creek Tribal Chairman Brandon Sazu says Duffy was taken to a Sioux Falls hospital after the attack. Patrick K. Duffy, the victim's cousin, says the superintendent is conscious. No further information is available on Patrick F. Duffy's injuries. Duffy oversees Bureau of Indian Affairs facilities in Fort Thompson and also manages tribal land. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley approved a tribal state gaming compact this week, signing off tribal approval. The tribe has been working with the state of New Mexico on the compact. The compact is for the Navajo Nation and four other tribes, which have gaming compacts that are set to expire. The compact was sent to Governor Susana Martinez. It also needs federal approval. According to the Navajo Nation, the gaming compact will help continue to boost tribal economies for the next 22 years. The tribe hopes the compact will be submitted to the federal government next week. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by NativeGiving.org, empowering Native children and families through community giving.
All the donations made on NativeGiving.org go toward the organization you choose.
Information on successful innovations at NativeGiving.org.
STEM students thrive at New Mexico Tech. Focused education in science and engineering prepare tech grads for personal and financial success. New Mexico Tech college costs and mid-career salaries of tech grads in Winds of Change magazine or nmt.edu. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. Today is Thursday, March 26th, and it's 6 minutes past the hour. And we are in the middle of our, actually, it's Wednesday, right? Today? No, it's Thursday. Thursday. Just kidding. We only have a couple days left of our membership drive here. So the phones can be ringing here to make your support for public radio here. It's 586-3636, or you can do it online at ktoo.org. And in the studio with me, I have Jeremy Briggs Roberts, one of the candidates for the position of music director and conductor for the Juno Symphony, as well as Sarah Radke Brown. Thank you for joining us in the studio.
Great to be with you.
So before we kind of launch into Jeremy, I have all sorts of questions for you because, you know, every community really wants to know what's going on with you. But before we do that, Sarah, we were just kind of talking about before we came on the air that we are in the middle of a membership drive, and membership is what makes public radio go. And I know that you're fairly new to town, although 2 years. You've got a couple winters behind you.
Almost 2 years in May.
Yeah, very cool. And I'm just wondering where you see KTOO and Juno Afternoon being an important part of your life.
Well, as a classical music lover myself, I love the fact that K2 and KRNN offer several opportunities to listen to classical music, and of course the Met broadcasts, which is personal to my heart here as an opera singer. When it comes to classical music and just knowing about the arts in Juno, that's key for, you know, for us arts lovers to know what's going on. So we thank you to K2 for doing that. For the community.
Thank you very much. And if you feel the same way Sarah does, give us a buzz here at 586-3636. And speaking of arts in our community, we have, and I hate to say you're the final, but then the final is pretty cool too. But the final candidate here in town, Jeremy Briggs Roberts. And thank you so much for coming to share your talent with our community.
Well, thank you for having me here, Shona. It's a real pleasure to be here in Juno, and we have definitely been having a lot of fun in orchestra rehearsals, and I personally have been having a great time getting to know Juno and all the wonderful people here, so it's been a real exciting time.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background? You run, what I read, the Washington-Idaho Symphony, which is kind of cool, because it's right on the border there in Pullman, right?
Right. I'm in Pullman, Washington. I live in Pullman, Washington, but just about 8 miles away is Moscow, Idaho. Both of the towns have major universities, Washington State University in Pullman, University of Idaho in Moscow. And we also service the Valley communities that are about 45 minutes south of us, Lewiston and Clarkston. So we're the only symphony orchestra in approximately about a two-hour radius. So we do 6 concert cycles a year, two concerts per concert cycle. And yeah, we have a lot of fun. So it's a very, very similar orchestra and very similar arts loving community, like Juno is here. So it's a really neat, fit in a way. You know, I definitely feel, very much at home here in Juno, like I do back in Pullman. So.
Yeah, so it's kind of the same style of players, you know?
Definitely. And the same style of warm-hearted people, too. You know, it's not a huge city. You don't get lost in the fray here. I think it's really a wonderful place where you can run into people at the grocery store and say hi and just really build relationships with a lot of really great people. So.
And a surprising amount, I always think of Juno as a surprising amount of talent for such a small community. Yeah. It's like, whoa, you can do what?
Totally. It's a fantastic symphony orchestra. It's incredibly well supported by people here in the community. But in addition, we have 2 opera companies here. It's incredible, wonderful Perseverance Theater, you know, wonderful things that are going on there. any number of other wonderful artistic endeavors that are happening here. So it's, and in fact, in some of my interviews, I've said it's a little bit like a little Vienna. Just all this wonderful artistic talent has accumulated here. So
without the snow, unfortunately.
Well, snow sometimes. Anyway.
Snow sometimes. So about the concert this weekend, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your musical selections and how you arrived at them and
sure.
where you see Juno artists fitting into them. And how
well, in trying to pick a program, I wanted to pick something that would be close to people's hearts here in Juneau and sort of reflect the area, culture, and history that has happened here. So I was thinking and put a lot of thought into trying to choose pieces which would work well together, and I came up with an all-Russian-themed program. The first piece is eight Russian folk songs by Anatol Liadov, and it focuses on Russian rural peasant life and villages and whatnot. Written in 1906, same time Juneau became the capital of the territory, I guess, at that point of Alaska, from Sitka, which has a fantastic Russian community, and certainly Juneau has a wonderful Russian influence here as well. So first piece, Anatol Liadov, eight Russian folk songs. You can hear birds chirping in the background. There's wonderful religious chants that are a part of this piece. There's a great cradle song. It sounds like they're rocking a baby to sleep. Ends with a really joyous round dance that's very, you can feel the peasant rusticity as a part of it, which is really a neat thing. It's very atmospheric. And then, you know, it's great to open the concert with something like that and then to move into more of a meaty piece. We have Sergei Prokofiev's third piano concerto. And Prokofiev was a fantastic pianist himself. He was also a student of Anatol Liadov. And Liadov was not such a big fan of Prokofiev's more innovative modern compositional style. He always complained that he should be more traditional and more focused on the Russian Romantic tradition. And in a large way, Prokofiev is very much a Russian Romantic, but in a very new 20th century style, which was emerging. He starts writing this piece in 1913. And if you can think of what else might be happening in the world and in music in 1913, Rite of Spring by Stravinsky is written, which opens and causes riots in Paris in the audience itself when it's performed. It's that visceral reaction with audience members. Piero Lunaire by Arnold Schoenberg is also being written at the same time. And the whole world is just pregnant with explosion just prior to World War I. So Prokofiev, when you listen to Prokofiev versus those two pieces, it's a very interesting, if not a kind of a romantic throwback. In a way. But the third piano concerto is a masterwork of the 20th century. It's one of the great, 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 great piano concertos, just like the Rachmaninoff piano concertos are, Tchaikovsky. It's very much in the major canon of pieces that are performed by every major symphony orchestra. So we have a fantastic pianist, Ra Jung Yang. She's a very good friend of mine. I've performed several times with her before. And she's going to light the piano on fire. I guarantee it. It's going to be sparks flying, pyrotechnics for sure. And then following that, after intermission, we have Tchaikovsky's monumental Fourth Symphony, which sort of dwarfs the first three. The first movement alone is about as long as the second, third, and fourth movements combined. He was going through a lot of depression issues at the time that he wrote it, a horrible failed marriage. He attempted suicide at one point in the midst of writing it. And yet it ends with probably one of the most joyous movements in music literature at that time. So it's a major piece of the Romantic repertoire. Certainly it's very, very Russian. You can feel its connection to Russian Romanticism very deeply. And I guarantee that people are going to come out of this auditorium just whistling all these wonderful tunes. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
What is the sound quality to you or the specific instrumentation that sounds like Russian Romanticism when you...
Oh, that's a good question. Well, you often hear a lot of pizzicati in the strings, wonderful deep bass sounds in the string section and in general, certainly in Prokofiev and Tchaikovsky, lots of big full brass, swooning sorts of overarching dramatic lyric lines, lots of big crescendos and diminuendos, and just extremely romantic, very recognizable or whistleable sorts of melodies that are, very dramatic in their output and just very, very much audience identifiable, I think. And I think people can very easily connect with this kind of music. So everybody, I would like to think, it has some romantic element in their personality, so it shouldn't be too much of a stretch. So,
Sarah, will the pre-show talk happen this time as it has in the past?
Absolutely. It's 1 hour before each concert. The concerts are March 28th and 29th at JDHS. The concert on Saturday is at 8 p.m. The concert on Sunday is at 3 p.m. with a concert conversation with Jeremy Riggs-Roberts starting 1 hour before each concert. So.
That's great. And where are tickets available?
You can buy them at the Jack or Hearthside Books or at our website at junosymphony.org.
That's great. And so you said you see lots of similarities between, where you are now in Pullman mm-hmm. and Juno. Are there certain things that you're like, well, I really got to think about this, about Juno?
You mean hesitation?
Besides the rain, yeah.
I can't think of a single thing. I love this community, and it's been growing ever since I got here. I came initially for our first three rehearsals, March 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and it was just exactly like the weather today. And then there were just some spectacular days here in the last couple of weeks, and I've just been struck by the incredible natural beauty, incredibly fine, nice, warm-hearted people. Everybody seems to be supremely enthusiastic about arts and making music, and it really does feed my soul. I said this to the newspaper, and I've said it, and I'll say it continually, that the orchestra rehearsals, we feed on each other. I think that the orchestra musicians are so desirous of making great music and really working hard to produce the best product they possibly can for the Juno community. And that feeds me and my enthusiasm. It's a really great reciprocal relationship. So,
yes, and they are on fire right now. I heard them rehearsing last night, and they sound fabulous.
Oh,
I'm
super
really excited for this concert.
Sarah, I have one more question for you. Because Jeremy is the final candidate in this search, which everybody's been very excited about for this past symphony season, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, what can Junoites expect next? What's the next part of the process?
Well, we've been collecting audience surveys at the concert, so please turn in your audience survey, because we really appreciate them, because we use them to review all the candidates, and that way the board and the players can make an informed decision. So basically in the next month, in April, we'll review all those comments that you've submitted to us, and the ballots will go out. It's being the voting is being
adjudicated?
By the McDowell Group.
Oh, okay.
And they'll send the ballots out, and they'll get them to them, and they'll review them, and in the next, mid-May, we'll get the results. And from there, we'll write a contract. And in June, we'll announce the new director. So it's going to be a whirlwind. It's going to be really exciting, though. So.
Yeah, sounds great. Sounds great. And it's been such a wonderful opportunity for our community to meet people like yourself, Jeremy, that come up here and share such amazing talent with us.
Well, and it's certainly been a privilege for me and my standpoint to be able to experience such a great community full of enthusiastic artistic supporters. And it's really amazing how the energy is palpable. You feel in this community they're so excited about music and the Juno Symphony and where it's going. So sky's the limit, it seems like to me. So
great. Jeremy Briggs-Roberts and Sarah Radke-Brown, thank you so much. Check out the Juno Symphony this weekend. That's Saturday and Sunday. Is there a website people can go to get more information?
JunoSymphony.org.
Thank you, sir, so much. And Jeremy, have a great concert this weekend.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
It happened on one of them zippity-doo-dah days. Now, that's the kind of day when you can't open your mouth without a song jump right out of it. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. My, oh, my.
What a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine heading my way. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-yay. Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. It's the truth. It's actual. Everything is satisfactory. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-yay. Wonderful feeling, wonderful day. Yes, sir. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-yay. My, oh my, what a wonderful day.
Oh, plenty of sunshine in the way. In the way, in the way.
Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. It's the truth, mm-hmm. It's actual. Everything is satisfactory. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-yay. Wonderful feeling, feeling this way. Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. It is the truth. It's actual. Huh? Why is that bluebird? Mm-hmm. Everything is satisfying. Zippity-yay. Wonderful feeling. Wonderful.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. Today is Thursday, March 26th, and it's 22 minutes past the hour. And speaking of zippity-doo-dah, here in the studio we have Rhonda Gardiner. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you're here to talk about this awesome concert that happens. It's kind of a yearly thing now.
It is a yearly thing. It's been a yearly thing for a very long time.
How many yearlies?
You know, my understanding is it started around the time of Linda Torgerson and Teresa Walden, which was... I shouldn't, it's a long time. I've been there 10 years, and it was well before I started.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. So this is a family, the thing I love about this is it's a family concert.
It is. It's pretty much all geared towards kids. So, but I think the, you know, attending adults will also have fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And we've toned it back. So anybody who's come in the past, let's see, in the past 5 or 6 or 7 years, it's sort of one of those fundraising snowballs where everybody says, well... Let's also do a silent auction. I know. Let's also do bake sale. Wait, let's sell dinner. Let's, you know, and it just kind of got bigger and bigger and bigger. And this year, I think everybody in fundraising worlds are overworked. So especially our parents who contribute a lot. So I took it back and just kind of pared it right back down to just being an hour-long family concert. Somebody did send me back down that slippery slope and said, can't we do a bake sale? So there will be some baked goods available for donation, but mostly it's songs and stories for an hour.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
What's the what are the stories and who's telling them? And then there's also music.
There is music. Yeah. Yeah. So we have two tellers. Lily Hudson Hope is coming back to tell again. She's told in the past, and she's telling Raven and the Beautiful Fish Woman, aka the Mermaid. Anybody who's heard Lily tell Raven stories, they're very fun. So I'm excited to have her back again. And then one of my favorite tellers in town is Pat McClare, and she was a longtime librarian out at Glacier Valley for a bit ago, and she is going to be telling the classic Giant Turnip, and she's saying that she's recruiting kid involvement. And then I'm going to be telling a story also. It's Parley Garfield has frogs, and the kids will also be involved. So we're going for lots of audience participation, both in the stories and in the songs. And we totally lucked out this year. I'm always excited when I fish through our parent list and find musicians in the bunch. And this year's just exemplary. And we had Riley Woodford playing guitar and Terry Schwartz was playing bass. Colin Osterhout, family member of yours, mm-hmm. is going to play the harmonica, and Abby James is going to be on the banjo, and I'm going to pick up my ukulele, and we have some kids' songs that we're going to do, and I hate to break it to you, but one of them is Zippity-Doo-Dah, because the reason the concert's called Zippity Doodah is because at the end of the concert, everybody is going to play along. So they put on their coats and they get their zippers ready and they zippity doodah up their coats and sing along, and then they make their way out the door. So it's just one of those transition. It's a teacher transition thing. You're just
totally,
them
totally
move on. So yeah.
Oh, that sounds like great fun.
Yeah.
So what time is it? Where is it? And is the tickets at the door? How do we get in?
Yep. It's going to be located upstairs from preschool. So it's in the church, the sanctuary part of the Northern Light Church. It's going to be it's suggested donation at the door. We're not selling tickets ahead of time. Adults $5, children $3. It is from 4 to 5 o'clock, which is so perfect because you can go and hear Susu and the Prophets Friday night and dance. You can wake up the next morning and sleep in. And then between 12 and 5, there's free ice cream scoop at Copa. And then you come to our concert. And then we get you out in time to go to the Alaska Discovery Foundation auction. Or Discovery Southeast auction and banquet at 6. So, it's just kind of the perfect day. And then you can go to Symphony on Sunday.
I know. It's a win-win.
It is. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. Where is there a place people can get more information, or should they just show up?
There's posters all over town. They can call if they have a question at preschool, and that's 586-2656, or junopreschool.org has a flyer up on the website if you want to look. Yeah.
And Rhonda, I would be remiss not to mention that we are in the middle of our membership drive here at KTOO. And as you well know, memberships make up a large portion of how we can bring such great service to our community, both on the airwaves and off. And I've interviewed you quite a few times and have seen you around this building a bit. And I'm just wondering if you could share with us what your love for KTOO is and what this radio station brings to your life.
I think that K2, KRNN, KXXL are all such a community institution. It's so much a part of all the events that go on. I mean, I pretty much, the first thing I think of when we have an event coming up is, oh, I got to get on Juno Afternoon. I've gotten brave a few times and even done my own radio show subbing. And sometime when I have more time, I'd love to do more of that. But, and I just learn, flip on any radio station and I learn new music all the time because it's not just that plugged in canned pop repetitive same songs all the time. It's just, you learn about your friends who are the DJs when they play music. So those, just that it is my community, and it's, a big part of us here.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate all that you do for our community. If you feel the same way Rhonda does, or if you've ever been on a guest on Juno Afternoon here, you appreciate finding out all about the community events happening at Juno Afternoon, I would encourage you to call right now to become a member yourself. We have sustaining memberships available. It's a wonderful way and an easy way to give month after month. 586-3636, or you can give us a donation or membership online at ktoo.org. Rhonda Gardner, thank you so much for telling us about Saturday's Zippity Doo concert. And can you give us just the time and the place one more time?
Northern Light Church upstairs, 4 to 5 on Saturday.
Always a super fun event. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shona.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 26th of March, 2015. It's the birthday of Tennessee Williams, Thomas Lanier Williams, born Columbus, Mississippi, 1911, author of more than 24 full-length plays, including A Streetcar Named Desire and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Tennessee Williams, who said, "I have found it easier to identify with the characters who verge upon hysteria, who were frightened of life, who were desperate to reach out to another person. But these seemingly fragile people are the strong people, really. A high station in life is earned by the gallantry with which appalling experiences are survived with grace." It's the birthday of the poet A.E. Housman, born in Worcestershire, England, 1859, author of the 63-poem cycle A Shropshire Lad, which includes "Loveliest of Trees, the cherry now is hung with bloom along the bough, and stands about the woodland ride wearing white for Eastertide." It's the birthday of Erica Jong, born New York City, 1942, grew up on the Upper West Side, went off to Barnard, edited the literary magazine there, best known for her novel, 1973, Fear of Flying, about Isadora's quest for a truly pure, guilt-free sexual encounter, a book that has sold 20 million copies. It was on this day, 1920, that This Side of Paradise was published, which launched the 23-year-old F. Scott Fitzgerald to fame and fortune. He finished the book after he got out of the Army in July 1919 at his family's home on Summit Avenue in St. Paul. And it's the birthday of the poet Robert Frost, born in San Francisco, 1874. His father died of tuberculosis when the boy was 11. Three of Robert Frost's children died, one from cholera, one from fever, one from suicide. His wife died young of breast cancer. Frost spent 12 years on a farm in Derry, New Hampshire. He got up early in the morning to write poetry, and then he worked on the farm. He wasn't a very successful farmer, but then again, none of his neighbors were doing very well either. It was a bad economy, the soil was poor, but his neighbors thought he was lazy because he liked to sit up late at night and going out to work when the spirit moved him. He sold the farm in 1911. He moved to England, where he wrote some of his best-known poems, including A Road Not Taken. And a few months after arriving in the country, he published A Boy's Will, 1913, and then North of Boston the following year, which sold 20,000 copies and made him famous. Frost said, "The core of all my writing was probably the 5 free years I had there on the farm." He also said, "In 3 words, I can sum up everything I've learned about life. It goes on." Here's a poem by Robert Frost entitled An Equalizer. It is as true as Caesar's name was Kaiser that no economist was ever wiser, though prodigal himself and a despiser of capital, and calling thrift a miser. And when we get too far apart in wealth, 'twas his idea that for the public health, so that the poor won't have to steal by stealth, we now and then should take an equalizer. An Equalizer, poem by Robert Frost, from The Poetry of Robert Frost, read by arrangement with the publisher Henry Holt and Company, LLC. Here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Progressive Insurance, with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And thank you for tuning in to KTOO Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. Today is Thursday, March 26th, and it's 33 minutes past the hour. We are in the middle of our membership drive here at KTOO. And speaking of membership drive, and someone who does a lot of work and just really cool shows for this place is none other than Katie Bosler.
Oh, thank you, Shona.
Hi. but this role today might be a little different because you also do lots of work at University of Alaska Southeast. And
Right. I'm the PR and marketing director there. Yeah. So, and I'm wearing that hat. I am joined by our special guest, Andy Hall, who is the author of a book called Denali's Howl, about a tragic expedition in 1967 on Mount McKinley, also known as Denali. And that'll be tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Egan Library, and we'll hear more about that from the man himself coming right up here. But I did want to let everybody know that this is actually capping off Andy's talk, a 25th anniversary celebration of the Egan Library. Believe it or not, our architectural wonder at UAS, the Egan Library, is 25 years old.
I had no idea it was over, you know, two.
And it's really held up well. It's so beautiful. You'll let you see it, Andy. It's just fantastic.
It's lovely.
Yeah, just great light. It's really you know, it won the American Association of Architects Award. It also is a real really showplace for Northwest Coast and Alaska Native art. So what's happening with this anniversary celebration is tomorrow at 5:00. There's going to be a nice reception with, you know, cake and cider and sushi and memories will be served by a variety of speakers, including John Pugh, Dennis Egan, our former Emeritus Chancellor Marshall Lind, Regent Gordon Evans, Emeritus Regent Gordon Evans, the architect, Tony Yorba, our Alumni Association President, Lieutenant Dave Campbell, and then the president of the newly formed Friends of the Egan Library Chapter, Kathy Reddy. And so this is also, you know, Friends of the Library, a longtime institution here in the capital city. We're now going to have a special Egan Library chapter. And so also this event will be an opportunity for people who attend to become founding members of this Friends of the Egan Library chapter. Also, Leanna Wallace will be on hand to answer questions about our beautiful Northwest Coast Native Art Collection, and John Unsicker, our wonderful guitarist, will be providing some nice music. So it all starts at 5:00 with the goodies and the celebration. 5:30, the speakers will be giving their remarks. And then just want to let everybody know, too, that this is sponsored by the Egan Library, the UAS Office of Development and Alumni Relations, and, of course, the newly Friends of the Egan Library chapter. And the Sound and Motion event, which we'll be hearing more about here momentarily with Andy Hall, is sponsored by Alaska Airlines and Aspen Hotels.
I had no idea that it was 25 years old, for one, and that's really awesome. It's
yeah.
just a great place to go hang out at
yeah.
the library.
Oh, yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, it is like the most beautiful yeah, library right. I've ever been in.
There's a book. Wow. Before I started working out there, I would just go out there just to hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Well, that's really exciting. So mm-hmm. definitely check that out tomorrow before you go to the Sound and Motion series. And, Andy Hall is here with us, the author of Denali's Howl, The Deadliest Climbing Disaster on America's Wildest Peak. Thank you for joining us in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
So you are a lifelong Alaskan, and I'm wondering, was it because there was some kind of something that happened along your way in living in Alaska that you knew about this?
Well, yeah, there was a, you know, I was born here. I was actually born just a little ways up the chain in Sitka.
Okay.
In fact, my parents honeymooned at the Baranoff.
Okay.
Nice.
I think
coming full circle here.
A little nicer then. but my dad was in the park service, and he was the superintendent of the park when this incident happened. And so there was a family aspect to the story. I knew my dad had been involved. He talked about it a little bit. It was something that it bothered him because, you know, this is the worst accident ever to occur on Denali. And then 7 men died. For a long time, it was the worst accident in North America. So through his life, he died about 7 years ago. It had been the climbing accident. And, mm-hmm. So I always wondered what his role was, what he did, what he didn't do. And I read a lot about it, and I realized this full story had never been told. And so I decided I need to tell it.
Yeah. So in that research, finding out, you know, what part you needed to tell, what things surprised you? What things were you like, nobody ever said that before?
Well, there was one part that I knew my mother would tell me. She would say, you know, your father kept the mountain open to climbing. And he had an award from the Mountaineering Club of Alaska on his wall. It was a lifetime achievement award. And I knew he had done something special to receive that. And we also knew these climbers. And my dad was not an outdoorsy guy. You know, he was a federal administrator. You know, he was the superintendent. You know, he wasn't the guy climbing mountains and stuff. But he was friends with Ray Janay. He was friends with Don Sheldon, you know, these kind of pioneering climbers and pilots, and they'd come and hang out. And I was like, what are they hanging out with my dad for? So, but I knew that there was this story that he had had this conflict with his superiors, and that was part of what I wanted to research. I couldn't put it in the book just because my mom told me, but I found a man in Anchorage who had been the leader of the Mountaineering Club in 1967, and I finally tracked him down. I found his name on the certificate, and he's a practicing attorney. He's 80 now. And when I met him, he said, yeah, come up to my office, and he jogged up the steps. And I thought, man, this guy knows something. He said, let's take the steps. It keeps you young. And I thought, he knows what he's talking about. But he said, I remember your dad. I designed the certificate. The Park Service tried to close the mountain because there had been a near tragedy in 67, which was the Winter Ascent. And then this one that killed seven young men, and the people up in the region said, we got to close this. It's too dangerous. And my dad refused. And he had the authority because of the way that a park management, the superintendent has authority that is his alone. He can be advised, but he can't be forced. So he didn't do it. And I think it ended up costing him his career because he left the Park Service about a year later. But this gentleman, Frank Nosek, said he stood up for us. He was a friendly ear to a big federal organization that really didn't really want to listen to us. So that was one of 100 things I discovered in this. And so it was kind of cool to discover that your dad was kind of one of the guys who does the right thing, no matter what.
Yeah. The righteous one. Yeah. Or in the good way. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. So this book, because you were a journalist for a long time in Alaska.
That's right.
And then was it this inquiry with your mother and the certificate and just kind of knowing about it was what got this started? And how did you kind of keep going through that? Because it's a lot of stuff to learn.
Yeah. Well, it was, I guess as many things happen in your life, it's kind of a forced thing. I was at Alaska Magazine for years, and I left. Kind of had a decision. I made a decision that they were going in a direction that I didn't think it should go. And I thought, I don't own it. It's not mine. I need to go do my own thing. And I'd had an idea of writing a book. And I'd had ideas, but they just didn't pan out. And so I had been loosely researching this for years. And I thought, at the time I was 49 years old. I thought, man, if you're going to do it, you got to do it now. If you're going to make a big change, might be time to do it. So I quit the job and I gave myself a certain amount of time and I connected with an agent and she said, if you can write a proposal, I can sell it. It's a good idea. But I spent 9 months on the proposal, doing the research. I went to Hawaii. I went to Atlin. Went to Denali. Went to Fairbanks. I did a lot of the research in the process of deciding whether I could actually write it. And then I got a contract the following spring. And then I had a year to write it. And I kind of have to have a deadline. It's kind of a reporter thing. If I didn't have to have it done, I'd still be working on it.
So it wasn't the 20-year novel.
No.
Okay.
No, there was there was nothing other than, just finally
doing
had
this.
To do it.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And so you're talking, speaking of agents, you're talking actually as part or doing a – not a lecture, but a workshop as part of the 49 writers.
That's right. Yeah, tonight at 6:00, and I'm just gonna get in a car, and somebody's gonna take me wherever it is. But if you want to find out where it is, go to 49 Writers online, and there's a Juno tab, and it'll tell you where, and you can register there. And it's 3 hours of I'm gonna talk about my time as a nonfiction writer, first as a reporter, then at writing for magazines, and then getting a contract And I've worked as a magazine editor and a news editor and a reporter and writer, so I've got a lot of different perspectives. So I'm going to toss out what I know, and hopefully people will have questions, and we may talk about some ideas that the attendees may have and how to move those forward.
Yeah, because some people, have a great idea, and they're like, I don't know what to do with them.
Yeah.
I actually can tell people where it is. I
love
have the
that.
Info. Yeah, it's at Congregation Sukkot Shalom, and that's in West Juneau, just over the bridge, 211 Cordova Street in Douglas. And there's a fee. It's $50 for members or $60 for non-members. And if you want to get more information or even register online, you can go to 49writingcenter.org. And that's a 49writingcenter.org.
Great. That sounds like a great way to just learn more and especially get some thoughts on somebody who might be there or has been there. So will your talk, will you include readings from the book on Friday? Yeah.
I've got a slide presentation. I've got pictures from the climb. And if I have time, I'll read a short excerpt. And I want to take questions. And I've discovered something in market or kind of going around talking about this book. A lot of people are interested in the fact that you wrote a book, not necessarily because they want to know what your book's about, but it's because they have a book they want to write. So I'm hoping to touch on that too, a little bit about how one might go about getting an idea ready and getting it into the hands of somebody who could help you get it published.
Yeah,
but it's a tight time frame, so I'll get through as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. And Friday, I imagine, there's a large climbing group in town. There's quite a few climbers. So I imagine that the topic of your book itself is something that will really bring people out. Yeah.
And the outdoor studies students have actually been reading Andy's book. They've been assigned the book, and they're going to be meeting with Andy. And they've actually been making some presentations in class this week, I think, on the book.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you told me that. I'm always surprised that people are actually studying my work. Hopefully not too closely, though.
Wait, so people are reading this? What? That's great. I like that. That's Andy Hall reading, or actually talking about his book, Denali's Howl, The Deadliest Climbing Disaster on America's Wildest Peak. It's a nonfiction account of the 1967 Wilcox Expedition. And that's part of the Sound and Motion series that is wonderful at UAS. Definitely check that out. That's this Friday night. You could also participate in the 25th celebration of the Egan Library.
Starting at 5 o'clock.
That's right. Where can people get more information, Katie?
Well, if you want to get more information about either of these events, if you just go to the UAS website, uas.alaska.edu, and then right there in the center panel is an article about Andy's talk tomorrow night. And then also, if you click on press releases, you can get more information about the Egan Library celebration. Also, if you go to just uas.alaska.edu/Juno, look at our calendar, and there's more information about both of these events right there.
And I would be remiss not to ask you, of course, what you love about public radio, Katie Busler.
Well, I love that I can just sit here and observe. I think one of the most talented interviewers in Juno, Shona
Aww.
Strouser.
Aw, sure.
I'm a fan. And to my knowledge, Shona is, for the most part, a volunteer on this station.
Definitely.
And, most of us who, this is our thing, one of our things, we all have our thing that we are, kind of comes more naturally to us. Well, if your thing is being on the radio, you can come here and interview people or host a music show. Also, it's for the betterment, of course, of the community. This is our community service. And as part of the community, if it isn't your thing, but you're listening, you might, coming on the air, your thing. I'm getting a little convoluted here. You might want to call us at 586-3636 and talk to our phone answerer here, Julie, and just, contribute whatever you can afford at this time or become a sustaining member. That's what I am, a sustaining member. Just takes a little bit out of my credit card every month, and, it adds up over the year, and then I can qualify for a Support Public Radio tote bag or a
hoodie.
The mug is awesome. I'm definitely going for the mug this time. So this is your opportunity, folks. You listen to Juno Afternoon every day. You find out what's going on in town. And I bet there's some people who are going to be at that workshop tonight who heard about it on this program.
That's true. Totally true.
Or at the Egan Library celebration tomorrow, 5 o'clock at the Egan Library. We're going to have some snacks and illustrious presenters making remarks, including the architect of this architectural wonder. And Andy Hall, of course, at 7 o'clock.
That's right. Andy Hall, thank you so much for joining us on air today.
Thanks for having me.
And Katie Bosler. Thank you,
Shona.
Interested in helping the Juneau Public Libraries with the StoryCorps at Your Library project? Join us on Tuesday, March 31st at 5:30 p.m. at the Downtown Public Library for an informational orientation. This oral history project will focus on Alaska Native educational stories, and we'll need volunteers to help recruit storytellers, be interviewers, facilitators, and to advise us. Call Beth at 586-0434 if you have questions.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. Theater in the Rough presents the final weekend of William Shakespeare's thrilling Life of Henry V at McPheeters Hall this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30, with a closing matinee this Sunday at 2. Tickets are at the bookstores, the Jack, the Door, and at theaterintherough.org.
Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. It's Thursday, March 26th. My name is Shona Strasser, and in the studio with me, I have the one, the only, Nancy DiGiardi.
I don't know, Shona.
I do. It's what gets me. Yeah. It's what gets me through the Thursdays.
Okay. Good.
So what's going on in this fine town?
Well, you just heard the thing that you're not supposed to miss, and you... I always say this, don't wait, go see it, and guess who? Okay, I have heard nothing but fabulous reviews of the Henry.
Yeah.
It's like the best thing they've ever done in a long time. So it's like one of the tops. So, and it's a great play. So,
yeah.
And but then you're also, you've got The Odd Couple. And if you forgot to go to see that, you're just going to have to go to plays all weekend. That's all there is to it. Because they're both wonderful. So there. Okay.
So there.
So we'll just end there.
Okay. And scene.
Okay. There's an After Hours Film Fest over at the Douglas Library tonight from 6 to 8 with one of my favorites, Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. I just really want glitter lipstick like that.
You do?
I do.
I'm writing that down right now. Glitter lipstick for Nancy.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So tomorrow from 5:30 to 7:30, they have Dancing Through the Stacks. That sounds like fun. Also at the Douglas Public Library. There is a Radiant Lotus Women's King Gong at the Greening Park. I don't know what that is. Sorry. There is a Sailing Around the Pacific, a fundraiser for Cyclone Pam Relief at the Silver Bow. Dan Hobson's at the Baranoff. There's a Siegla Friday Social at the Imperial. Of course, you have Henry V and The Odd Couple to get to. There's a Blues Fusion kickoff party with live music by Mr. Moo at the UAS Rec Center. And, of course, at 10 o'clock... Susu and the Prophets. Know anything about that?
That's so funny, because you were like, at 10 o'clock, I was like, what?
What?
Seems like that should be cool.
You better put that on your calendar.
I better write that on my hand next to glitter lipstick. Show up for gig.
They like it when you do that.
Yep.
There is, remember when COPA won, whatever it was they won, with the support from all the community, and now they're doing the free ice cream party on Saturday from 12 to 5.
So that's a lot of free ice cream.
Yes, it is.
Yummy.
Nummy. Go there. Let's see. Backing up, there's Tai Chi for Arthritis at Greening Park from 9 a.m. to 5. At 10 o'clock in the morning, there's the Glacier 10K and Mile Run. You start at the Glacier parking lot. Let's see. There's the Blues Fusion is having workshop lessons in the hangar from 1 to 5. There's a book signing with Lois Linfield at Hearthside Books. Linfeld, I'm sorry, from 2 to 4, and that's at the Valley Hearthside Books in Nugget Mall. 4 to 5, we got the Zippity Doodah concert, as we mentioned. There is, let's see, the Symphony Spring. That Saturday is the last of the candidates for the Symphony. Their spring concert starts at 8 o'clock. I believe there's a pre-talk talk at 7, probably. 9 p.m., the big dance with Mr. Moo at the Red Dog Saloon from 9 to midnight. And, of course, there's also, out in the valley, Kari Griven and the Wrist Rockets at McGivney starting at 10. So Saturday's a packed day.
Sure
you
is.
Better take your vitamins. All right. Sunday, we have the weekly ukulele thing. There's Blues Fusion workshop lessons again at the hangar from 1 to 5. And Henry is at 2:30 to 4. The symphony concert is from 3 till 5. The Odd Couple is at 4. So you could stagger them and stagger from one to the next and not see the whole thing. But it some days. It's your last day, people.
That's it.
And from 7 to 10 p.m., the last dance with Mr. Mu at the Hangar Ballroom. On Monday, March 30th, from 9 to 11, is a pancake breakfast over at the Senior Center. Who doesn't like bacon and pancakes?
I was like, "What is? Did they say bacon breakfast?
You know, it comes with some of that.
That's nice.
So it's a fundraiser for Meals on Wheels.
Oh,
and
cool.
So a real good idea to swing through there and get some pancakes on Monday morning. There's an after party potluck at Ock Rec. I don't know what party it's after. It's at 3 o'clock. It's just on my little piece of paper.
It's probably the blues fusion thing.
That could be.
I bet.
Okay.
If I had to wrap something up, that's what I would wrap up.
Okay.
From
that's
the weekend.
Good
the
thinking.
Yeah.
All right. There is a Marie Drake Planetarium event happening on Tuesday from 6 to 7. The Stories of Sierra Leone, a storytelling event at Northern Light from 7 to 8:30 on April Fool's Day, everyone's favorite day of the year. It's our clink wine tasting. There are over 30 wines coming. The distributors are all going to be there. We have music with Tom Loker, Wayne Norland, and Clay Good. It's just going to be a lovely afternoon, 5:30 to 7:30. Learn a lot about some wine and have some at the same time. And benefit the Jack. All good. So get your tickets now. Call me if you want some. If two of you come, it's $25 a piece. If you come by yourself, it's $30. Oh, well. But anyway.
Sorry, single people. Once again, you're five bucks more.
There's also Wildlife Wednesday. Riley Woodford presents Small Mammals of Southeast Alaska.
Ooh.
That's at 7. So that's kind of wraps up your week. And then we're into April. Holy cow.
I know.
How'd that happen? April gets pretty busy. April 1st is the deadline for fine arts scholarships applications and a couple of other application things. And then we have also deadlines on April 15th. So if you're a deadline sort of person, I saw a cartoon in The New Yorker about that where she just was putting her deadlines in chronological order so she could mess them all in order.
Yeah. That's helpful.
It's kind of like that. Yeah.
Where can people find out this information?
It is on the JAHC website at jahc.org, although we've been having technical difficulties with that. So please call me if you can't get it. I can see it on my computer, but I'm the one that set it up. So I need somebody to do test drive the tech for me. So, and it's also on the K2 website.
That's right.
So, which is ktoo.org. Aren't we doing a fundraiser?
We are.
Shouldn't somebody call?
Yes, 586-3636. Membership drive right now happening. Thanks for tuning in to KTOO.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269.